to it, so see you later.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here with Chris, because when we rode the bicentenary trek up into the Highlands, we came down here to celebrate, and Chris had up balloons, well done, and all that sort of thing, and then we were on his website for a week or two, so good support.
Thank you.
Anyway, nice to see you all, and nice to see so many old friends. I see one or two that I've known for 50 years, 60 years. I see a man that I've known for 70 years, but I'll not mention his name, James. Anyway, I've been asked to tell you this about my story, which involves a historic horse theft. I've recently published a book, unlimited numbers lying at the door here, called On the Trail of a Broken Shoe, which has as its backbone the stolen horse case. But it has many other local stories. And because we're at Kirkcudbright today, I'll mention Kirkcudbright. Grandfather John Nelson enlisted in the Scottish Horse Regiment in World War I. He joined up with three pals. They went off to the Dunkeld to train, and when they were posted, two of them were posted to France and two of them were posted to Salonika. The two that went to France were both killed. The two that went to Salonika both survived. So Grandfather was in Salonika along with a pickin, or maybe even a couple of pickins, and an Austin. So there is that connection. And a generation later, in World War II, Father John joined the Kirkcudbright Battery of the Royal Artillery, along with a lot of local boys. And I've included in the book mention of one of Kirkcudbright's famous sons, Billy Marshall. He probably wouldn't be, maybe he would be adopted by Kirkcudbright in Victorian times, but perhaps with our sensitivities now, because he would be definitely a murderer, definitely a thief, maybe even a sexual predator, but because he apparently had four children after he was 100. But anyway, he is a Kirkcudbright person, and he was actually an in-law of the man that stole my ancestor's horse. I've included two or three stories. David Pickin gave me a couple of amusing ones. So there's lots of amusing stories before we get into the meat of the story. But the main story is about the theft, and it's a remarkable story, a tragic story, but a true story. The story of the last man hanged in Scotland for horse stealing. The tale started for me 70 years ago at my grandfather's knee when he told me the gist of a whole lot of stories. But just the gist, really. And it was basically one of our family had a horse stolen. He followed the tracks in the snow, supposedly, broken shoe in the snow, and he caught the man and he was hanged, and he became the last man hanged in Scotland for horse stealing. Well, I remembered the gist of it, and it wasn't until perhaps I was 60 I decided to look further into it, and I discovered that the story, the gist was remarkably accurate, but there was far more detail in it than that. So I would recommend you don't dismiss Grandpa's tales. You know why? Because Grandpa's tell the same stories again and again and again. So they will be true because they're well rehearsed. It's like learning the times table long ago. But I didn't find much. I researched for 2 or 3 years and I didn't find much at all. I found a man in Paisley that was hanged for stealing a root of kale from his neighbour's garden, but that was the only one. I couldn't find any horse stealing until I stumbled on a book called Scottish Executions, 1600 to 1900. And in it, each chapter was for a particular theft. So you got robbery, murder, horse theft, horse stealing. And in that, the last one was a George Watson. And he'd stolen it from a John Kerr. And it said, an interesting facet of the case was that pursuit into the Highlands, a broken shoe allowed pursuit into the Highlands to be relatively easy. So with that help, I began to research in the National Archives in Scotland, and I was at Kew on one occasion. So I found the route taken. And when the in 1811, John Kerr, he lived on a through route from Dalmellington to New Cumnock, and because it was a through route, lots of people needed hospitality because they would just be on a horse, cart, whatever. So on this particular night, he gave a band of tinkers hospitality, and when he got up in the morning to feed his horse, he discovered the horse was gone, and so were his guests from the night before. So he set off in pursuit, and he reached Kilmarnock, and before Kilmarnock, he was told that yes, they went this way, and the grey horse was in the lead. So he followed on up through Glasgow, Loch Lomond, Inverary. He spoke to the sheriff in Inverary and got an arrest warrant, and he got the use of two constables, not police constables, because there was no such thing then, but county constables, I think they were called. In those days, there was a fund called the Rogue Fund, funded by local landowners, and this was used to apprehend culprits. So he set off north, up through Dalmally, over the Black Mount, to King's House, down into Glencoe, and down south again into a district called Appin. And he'd heard that the gypsies habitually stayed in a secluded glen in a district called Medderloch. There is no such place now, but Benderloch was the nearest you could get to it, and it was named after they made a village after the train came. But anyway, he caught he walked into the camp. His constables stayed hidden, and he walked into the camp, and as an old crone says, you're a long way from him the day, good man. And he said, he was a long way from home, why? And what would he want? I want nothing at all apart from my pony. So just at that, the leader of the gang arrived, and he swore and was about to attack John Kerr. And he said, I didn't expect to see you, Nuckburney, and this is the name of the farm. Farmers are very often, historically at least, known by their farm. So I didn't expect to see you, Nuckburney. And John says, I didn't expect you to steal my horse. So he was about to attack him with his stick when the two constables jumped out and arrested him and put him in handcuffs. So he was taken down to Inverary, and he was interviewed, shall we say, there. But then he was transferred to Ayr. And that's the one thing I would like to be able to find. It's something I haven't found. If you can imagine Inverary, this is, by the way, is the route that he took. So you can have a look at that. But if you're at Inverary, can you imagine taking a culprit or a criminal over the moors for 3 days, or putting him on a ship at Inverary Harbour, sailing him round to Ayr? I know which one I would choose. So I've yet to discover how he was transferred. But anyway, he was a week later transferred to Ayr Tollbooth. And interestingly, the jail had been checked out by an inspector just a few weeks earlier. And it says, the prison inspector, James Patterson, inspected Ayr jail shortly after the Watsons were imprisoned. He stated that Ayr was one of the best of the old Scots prisons. Jail fever had not occurred for many years, chiefly as a result of the uncommonly complete ventilation. Open slits in the walls, placed directly opposite each other, made it possible for fresh air to constantly pass through the cells. The prisoners themselves were dirty and offensive to the last degree, covered in vermin, lice and bedbugs, with no change of clothing for nearly 12 months. He recommended that when prisoners entered the jail, their clothes be taken away, washed and scoured, or put in an oven properly heated to destroy all the vermin and disease. Patterson noted that the prisoners slept upon straw on the thrown on the stone floor. This had not been renewed for many years. But he also interviewed the inmates, and they reported that some of them had lost fingers through frostbite in previous winters because the uncommonly complete ventilation faced to the north. So anyway, Patterson noted that at the end of the passage was a debtor's room, and this he described as lighted by two large glazed windows with four beds and a fire that never smokes. It appears that bear cells were used to house the inferior persons, and that debtors were regarded as a better class of person. They were even allowed to, their wives were permitted to stay overnight occasionally. So, they were tried at Ayr, and on the 2nd of May 1811, George Watson Sr. was found guilty and hanged on the 7th of June. His son was sent to be transported beyond the seas. This didn't actually happen. He was kept in a prison ship in the Thames for 7 years and then released. But it was interesting that any lawyers in the group, because there is a wee piece about the trial, and it said that insofar as on the night of Sunday the 10th of March in this present year 1811, or early in the morning of Monday the 11th day of the said month, or of one or other days or nights of the month, or of the month of February immediately preceding, or the month of April immediately following. So he's determined not to let him off on a technicality. The said George Watson Sr. and George Watson Jr. did both and each, or one or other of them, feloniously steal, enter into the stable of John Kerr in the parish of Newcomer in the Shire of Ayr, and did from thence wickedly and feloniously steal and carry away like Greymere. So this, as I say, solicitors, I don't know whether they're probably, well, I always reckon they're paid by the word anyway, but but anyway, the son, he must have been released, because there is a story of a punch-up on the village green in Cumnock, I think, and two gypsies fighting, and the women are screeching, and one of them says, "Ah, and your feather stole a helter from McBurney." And then one of the others says, "Ah, but there was a wee beast in Enot." So we can only presume this was George Watson Jr. returning from London. So he didn't learn his lesson, because a generation later he stole a horse in Perth, or Perthshire, and he was sentenced to be transported again. And this time he was transported, but unfortunately he died a week out of Van Diemen's Land, or Port Stanley, or whatever it's called, Tasmania. So he hadn't learned at all. And I've told you about John's heroic pursuit of the thieves, but Margaret pointed out, quite rightly, that the real hero was John Kerr's wife, Elizabeth. She was left at home with 8 children and a farm to run, while her husband rode off to God knows where, or how long he'd be away. For all she knew, he could have been lying behind a dike with his throat cut. So she was the hero. So, following all my archive research, I knew the route taken, and I knew that my ancestor's name, and I knew exactly where the pursuit had gone. So I wondered if at the age of 65, if I could ride that route. And so it's 150 miles up into the Highlands. So my pal Derek Henderson and I decided we were going to go for it. So in the November 2010, we set off up to the Highlands. We knew that they had stopped at King's House at the top of Glencoe. So we had to go 20 miles, say, back and find a bed and breakfast with a field, and 20 miles forward and build it up that way. And we did that. So we created a meticulous plan with a lot of phone numbers to call in any emergency, and there were some, as it turned out. But Margaret had bought me a day's fell riding in Cumbria for my Christmas, so Derek got to hear about it and he wanted to come to that as well. And so we set off, and afterwards we deliberately took the owners for their supper in the village pub in Cumbria, and just happened to mention what we were planning, and they just happened to take the bait and say, "Oh, we could lend you the horses, you know." So this was on the basis that we fed them all winter. But it was useful, because it allowed us to ride the horses every week. So we set off for Knockvinny away up in the back through the Forestry roads twice a week. So that was good. it got it let us get to know the horses and toughen their butts a bit. So, on the 16th of May 2011, we set off for the Highlands with two heavy horses. So I will show you the slides of the journey for me. If you want to ask questions, you could do it perhaps after this, because each photograph is only a few seconds. So if we start talking about one in particular, we'll lose the... These are Ben and Echo are the front two, and Manny is the one at the back. Manny is not a Clydesdale, as you can see. Manny is an Ardennes. So this is us, we've practiced all winter, so this is us on mountain top. I wish the weather, when the time came, had been as good as that. Willie Johnson wanted to come and film us. Willie Johnson, the BBC reporter. So he will feature shortly. This is up at Loch Roan, which used to be the water supply for Castle Douglas. Derek and his daughter and son-in-law going ahead, opening the gates.
What sort of horse is that in the back
there? The back one is a Clydesdale.
No, I said that.
The front one is Ardennes. There's Willie Johnson. You can see the difference between riding a horse and sitting in a horse. Willie's wasn't very experienced, but it was great fun. It was interesting. We were away at the far end, and Willie phoned, "Right, Derek, gallop towards the camera." The Derek went trun 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 trun, and then phoned me, "Okay, John, you gallop towards the camera, trun 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 trun." My horse went twice as fast because its pal was at the far end, and then when it came the bit on the television a week later or whenever, there's no sign of Derek at all. And people were saying, "I thought you were on that ride." "Exactly," he says. This is at Loch Lomond, the bed and breakfast where we were staying, Bobby Lennox from Shantron. Yeah. And there was a Dutch couple staying, and they sort of heard the commotion outside and looked out. Oh, God, they were out like a shot with their cameras. The blacksmith, there's one horse had developed a loose shoe, so he agreed to come up to Loch Lomond at 7 o'clock to get us away at the right time. So we've finished up paying him and giving him a bottle of whiskey as well. So he took the lid off and passed it round, and these Dutch people have seen these Scottish people drink whiskey at 7 o'clock in the morning. This is us having a glass of bubbly before we leave. Up the Lomond side. At one point, we were trotting up the old road, and there was a German film crew, so we just trotted through them, and we had no option. So they had a perfect chance to film these horses, but all the film stars were right behind dark glass vehicles. We can tell you that horses don't like ice cream. This is us at Tarbert. We're coming out and going away towards Inverary. Nope, don't like it. It was shortly after this that we noticed one of the horses being slightly tender of its foot. And we never ever discovered what it was, but we think perhaps in the field there must have been a nail. It must have picked up a nail in the field that night. We stayed at Arher, and when we were about to catch the horses in the morning, a school bus screeched to a halt. "Tell the kids all about it, because we saw you on the television last night." So. This is us going up Rest and Be Thankful. This road that you see has now been upgraded hugely to act as a relief road when if the main one is blocked. So we were probably one of the last people to ride up there. Well, we would be the last couple to ride up that road before it was improved. riding through some galleys or lugries. That picture is really only for a New Zealand friend whose his father, or her father rather, came over here after his wife died, and just as a break, and he was lost, a poor soul, and we brought him here, and he found his ancestor's grave, and we were going to the fish place, and when we stopped, "Are you coming?" "No, no." He says, "Fish is fish," and he just sat still, so he wasn't impressed by the fish. So this is at Inverary, Carloonan Farm. I presume that's a dovecot or something of the kind. This is a place that when we called and I gave them the story just to explain why we're needing a field, and afterwards Derek said, "Oh, you'll need to distill your story a bit, it's too long." Mm-hmm. Okay. So the next place we went to, I distilled it a bit. And then he proceeded to tell them all the bit I'd missed out. So this particular day, I decided to stay and gather up all the stuff and let my daughter Frances and Derek ride, because at this moment we just had the two horses. So I was fortunate, I was able to ride all the parts that my ancestor, we knew for certain that my ancestor had ridden. And this was a disastrous day when they were riding up through the forestry. The Ardennes slipped from the path and went and slipped into a moss hole and went to the belly. And horses, apparently, they just shut down if they're in that sort of danger situation. And we were debating just what we were going to do, because there was no way of getting anywhere near it with tractors or anything to lift it out. And at the very last minute, they calmed it down and it had one last try and managed to rear up and get out of the hole. So you'll see in a minute the horse, and it's slightly... We're calming it down, and later on you'll see where we walked into the River Arkey to get its belly and its legs washed. So that was quite a stressful day. And Derek travelled in the car for a mile or two just till his heart got back to a normal rhythm. He looked a bit worried. So this is on the there's a wee cross, cuts a corner just before Dalmally, and this is the old military road. It was interesting, we found an old cast iron horse trough which may have been put there by, what was the name of the man that made the...
General Wade.
General Wade, top of the class. Well, we're posing on the horses, as we were told. The ladies are off to gather up all the stuff and then go in search of some sandwiches for lunch, a cup of tea or whatever. So we were doing the easy bit. This is some of the young ones. The girl on the right is I think she was Greek, and she wanted to come and film the ride, and we didn't ever see the film. I don't know whether it wasn't up to her standard, but we didn't ever see it. My two younger kids. A lot of nonsense carrying on. So this is the railway line leading to Oban. At Dalmally. This is us in the River Orkney, just getting their bellies and tails washed after their ordeal. Beautiful river. jump that one. So we walked them for the last mile just to cool them down a bit. And the people that were staying with in Glenorchy, his name was John Kerr too. And I was so enamoured with these horses and so delighted to be involved. And you'll see later on John and I comparing noses to see if we're possibly related. There was a case of each night of unsaddling them and grooming them and putting a rug on them and giving them their feed. John and I. This is at breakfast the following morning. Wonderful folk, and they were so pleased to be part of it. They wouldn't take anything for our stay, and it was the same with the people down at Inverary, and we stayed there twice. You'll see we'll go around in a circle and finish back at Inverary. So we went back up later and took them out for their supper, and I took them a book 2 or 3 months ago. That house is in the middle of forestry nowadays, and you know there may be some merits to forestry, but midges, oh, it was awful. You had to approach the house, and it was in darkness. You had to go into the house in the dark and then put the lights on. Well, a million midges would follow you in the door. There's the nose comparison. No, it doesn't really work. And the young ones, they decided they would ride a mile up to the Bridge of Orkney, and then Derek and I would get back on to go over the Black Mount. This is the middle of May, remember? And look at the snow on the hills. Yeah. And we chose May because we thought, oh, we'll get great weather then and there'll be no midges. There certainly were no midges. So we're just heading up a mile to Victoria Bridge here. And then we had a bite to eat, and then Derek and I headed over the hills. Derek and I were veering off the modern road and going down through the old road and down past, oh, I can't remember the name of the hotel. It's a mecca for hill walkers. And then we finished up down at Glencoe Village, and we were staying along the front. So this is the following morning after all our clothes have got dried. So it's amazing what a good stiff whiskey and a heater can do. And we were having a day off. I was told that it would be more for us than for the horses. The horses would be fine. But we decided to go back up to the National Trust Glencoe Centre. And we'd even laminated an information sheet. And a girl at the desk says, oh, well, don't get in the way of the tourists. Go and stand away over there in the corner. And we thought, oh, bugger it. So we cut out and went back down and put our feet up. And then that night there was a horrendous storm, and in the late afternoon there was a horrendous storm got up, and the girl that we were staying with, she said, I'm not having these horses out in all that storm. So she persuaded her builder neighbour to move all his equipment into the into the corner of the workshop, and we got the horses in overnight. So she was a star. So the morning after that we set off again, but we didn't realise just the implications of this storm the night before. This is us. We went up past Ballyhoolish, the village that used to produce all the slate. Went up past the school and over this mountain and down to Loch Creeran. And it started off as a goat track and then deteriorated a bit. And Peter is falling with the bike. Absolutely useless, and with a broken chain. So we're getting up here and we had to keep climbing bun banks and get off to get up the hill. And at one point, Peter was falling away behind, and I said, we'll have to wait in Peter. And Derek says, no, we haven't the time to wait in Peter. He'll just have to take his chance. I said, it's your bloody bike that he's carrying. So I waited on Pete and eventually arrived. So this is getting up the hill, so he's taking a very artistic photograph. And we're heading for a gate. There's a gate through onto the forestry. And then we discovered a dozen trees had fallen across the path. So the option was to go back and add another 20 miles to the ride, which wasn't really on. So I walked to the first tree and stepped over it, and the horse did the same. And fingers crossed, walked to the next tree, stepped over it, and the horse followed, and went down this hill, and then there was a steep muddy slope, and we scrambled down there, and Derek shouts, he says, you're getting on fine, but you've no idea the carnage behind you. He says, his horse wasn't quite as happy. So here's the hero with a bike, mountaineering with a bike. And, you know, we've very often had to just ride with your heads down into the storm. And we had Appin Historical Society phoned to say, can we meet you and have a chat? And we said, well, no, because we're running behind time. Oh, well, we'll bring your lunch down to the Loch Creeran. So they brought a lovely picnic lunch. So that was good. And I've since been asked to go back up and talk to them. So there's your Medder Loch. This is the old railway track, which have made into a lovely cycle track. And a typical village, we were told to meet at the cafe car park, and half the village was at the cafe car park. The other half of the village were at the school. They had been told that we were coming to the school at such and such a time. So there's two different groups making different arrangements, but they hadn't told us. The Oban Times had to get a picture, of course. And at this stage, the other horse was better, and this friend brought the horse in the box. And John Kerr, 200 years ago, he would get on a ferry boat and the horse would swim behind across the two sea lochs, or two loch and the sea loch. And Derek says, well, we could hang on to the horse's tail and swim across. You're kidding. So we decided to hitch a lift on this float round the head of the loch. And we're heading now back to Inverary, where we started. So here's the Vital Spark. You remember the Parahandy tails with the puffer? So the horses were exhausted, so they lay down, and the moment they heard the bucket of cake rattling, they were there. But we went down for supper in Inverary, and we discovered that because of the storms, that all the power was off. So all that we could eat was what was cooked on a barbecue, but it still tasted pretty good. So the following morning, we rode back down from the farm, and we rode out the entrance at Inverary Castle. We assumed that horses could do that. But We rode up Main Street, the girls stopping the traffic. And we arrived at the Inverary Jail, where it's a very much a tourist honeypot. It's not actually the jail that George Watson was held in. This one was built 10 or 20 years later, but they gave us a great welcome, and they were out with all the staff with their traditional garb. That's the original toll booth, and it's now it's actually a gift shop. The last time we were back, the tourist information had gone as well. And this is Inverary Castle, and the Duke didn't come out to say hello, so he's maybe keeping his head down after that television programme about the Duchess. And this is interesting, the girl in red. I'd been researching all over the place, but over a long period, and she had discovered the story in a book. And she'd been at Ayr the day before, and then was up at Kilmarnock. And so I got a phone call to say, were you the gentleman that was researching the last man hanged in Scotland for horse stealing? I said, I was. I am. And she said, well, there's a lady came in today researching exactly the same thing. And it transpires that she is descended from John Kerr's daughter, as the same daughter as I am descended from. So we're 4 times removed cousins, but I didn't know she existed. So she joined on the first day of the ride. She joined the backup team, and then at the very end of the ride, she brought her elderly aunt to see us home. So she thoroughly enjoyed that, and they took us out for a late lunch in the town. This bridge was built by the Duke of Argyll for Queen Victoria's 3-day visit. And it would cost millions by nowadays standards. And this was just so they made a new drive as well, so that she could get a wonderful view of the castle as she arrived. So this is the back home, and just having a last ride on the horse before it goes back to Cumbria. There you are. So, has anyone any questions?
How long were you away? How long did
it take? We were away for 10 days. John Kerr, he rode for a week all the way from New Cumnock, but he would be going the clappers really, and we had the luxury of a good meal and a warm bath or a shower. And of course, we had 2 days in Glencoe because of the weather. So it took us 10 days.
And you started where?
We started at Balloch, which is just on the outskirts of Glasgow, because we were liaising with the police, and they said, do not on any circumstances ride the part below Glasgow, because it's a dangerous road and it's very soft verges. And everywhere else we could find a footpath, a cycle path, a military road or something. But at that part we couldn't. And there's a friend of ours was killed on that road, and I thought, well, it's not worth the risk really. Because horses are, they're only going at 4 or 5 miles an hour.
How many miles did you go?
We would go something like 130. John Kerr would do maybe 150 or 160. Mm-hmm. Depends. We don't know whether he rode or whether he went by ship. So that I haven't been able to find the harbour master's day book, which would have been quite useful.